You're listening to KCRW. I'm Matt Gillum. It's been a year since the unthinkable happened. For the first time in the country's history, the peaceful transition of power from one president to another was interrupted on January 6, 2021, when a mob of Trump supporters stormed, breached, and defiled the U.S. Capitol. The nation and the world watched the insurrection unfold in real time. Despite hours of live television coverage documenting the attack and its participants, some political factions have reframed the assault as a mere demonstration by alleged patriots and convinced millions it was just another day at the Capitol. Joining us to reflect on that day and the year since is Inland Empire Congressman and member of the House Committee investigating the January 6th attack, Pete Aguilar. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Now, you were in the House chamber the day of the insurrection. When you think back to that day a year ago, I wonder what one or two things immediately come to mind. I'm thinking a smell, a sound, maybe a message to or from a loved one.
Yeah, I mean, the knock on the door is the rioters broke in the chamber and were banging on the House door. I mean, this is the door that the president walks through before he addresses a joint session of Congress. And they were pounding on that door, broke those windows. I remember hearing that and looking back and thinking that this is, we're not in good shape. I wrote in a little journal that I keep next to me at 2:34 p.m. that day that I was scared. And I was. I didn't write a lot of thoughts from that day, but that was one of them, because at that point, that's when we really needed to get evacuated. And that's what comes to mind.
We're a year out from the insurrection now. Are you at all surprised that in that time, the attack on the Capitol has gone from widely being seen as an assault on democracy to being reframed as patriots standing up to tyranny? Are you surprised by how quickly that view went from being something very fringe to making inroads into right-wing media?
Yeah, I am. And it shows the power of the bully pulpit. You know, the former president, you know, himself continues to support conspiracy theories and continues to kind of foment all of this, you know, language and fear. And that's difficult, makes it difficult to do our work, but it also makes it all the more shocking that these are duly elected members of Congress who took the same oath to the Constitution that I did. And now they apparently don't believe in a rule of law, or that some of these individuals, you know, committed crimes worthy of being put in jail, even though they assaulted police officers and, you know, people died that day.
One of the bombshells that came out of the committee was that Fox News hosts were pleading with Trump's chief of staff to have him get the president to call off his supporters during the attack. Behind the scenes, I mean, they realized the seriousness of the situation, but for the better part of a year now, they've been downplaying the events of January 6th to their audience. I guess this is a two-part question, but I mean, what do you think that says about their credibility? And do you believe their audiences care?
I don't think their audience cares. I think that what we see is that, you know, these are folks who, and that for a significant number of the American population, they believe the president, they believe the big lie. They believed that they could send, you know, $10 more, you know, to him for the legal defense fund after the election. And that there was a financial component to all of this as well, that I think we will, you know, talk more about in the future. But the level at which individuals continue to support the big lie is incredibly frustrating. While they, you know, behind the scenes, as you mentioned, while some of these individuals, you know, clearly some of them feared for the president's legacy. So they weren't fearing for the loss of life or for disrespecting the rule of law. They were talking specifically about the president's legacy as well. And, you know, we still don't know completely what happened in these 187 minutes that the president potentially stood in his study watching all of the attacks and not lifting a finger to do anything.
And you just referenced the 187 minutes, and I'm glad you brought that up. Your colleague Liz Cheney, she mentioned that over the weekend, saying that the committee now has firsthand testimony that the president was watching the attack on TV and that his daughter, Ivanka, asked him at least twice to stop the violence. Could that negligence translate to criminality? And is that something the committee is looking into?
We're looking into all aspects of what happened that day, what led up to it, what activity for people both in government and out of government, what role that they played. But clearly, that is something that troubles us. You know, the fact that you know, was it just Ivanka? Was it just his daughter? Or was it other people who were trying to reach the president and get a hold of the president to ask him to do something about his supporters supporting the insurrection and mounting a full, you know, riot against Capitol police officers and the temple of democracy that is the U.S. Capitol? You know, we don't know. So the short answer is we continue to find out facts. We continue to chase the truth. We're going to continue to do that in the next couple months before we prepare a report. But this is something that is, you know, deeply troubling, and we'll let the facts speak for themselves.
A moment ago, I brought up your Republican colleague, Liz Cheney. When we spoke back in July, you said you'd never worked with her. Can you tell us a little bit about the working relationship you have with her and the other Republican on the committee, Adam Kinzinger?
Both of those two members are just class acts. And you know, I had not worked with them on pieces of legislation or on anything very substantively prior to work in the committee. But I can tell you, I just have a deep amount of respect for the work that they're doing, despite the personal attacks and onslaught that they face from members of their own party for the work that they are doing in finding out the truth about what happened on January 6th. So I just have immense respect for them. I'll tell you personally, I don't think anyone is as prepared as Liz Cheney when it comes to hearings, meetings, briefings. She is focused. She is ready. She is prepared to defend democracy. And I thought she summed it up incredibly well over the weekend when she said members of her party can either be loyal to President Trump or they can be loyal to the Constitution, but they can't do both. And I think that's a lot of the feeling that that some of my colleagues across the aisle are going to have to decide.
Based on what you're saying, I mean, it sounds like Liz Cheney has essentially, you know, drawn a line in the sand. And I'm wondering, what do you think that says about the state of the Republican Party, that these conservative members who are on the committee with you looking into and investigating what truly happened January 6th are now pariahs in their own party?
Well, it's deeply troubling. I mean, our country prospers with a two-party system that does well, and we have a debate on ideas. But it doesn't really feel like that's where we are. It doesn't really feel like we're debating ideas. It feels like there is a consistent number of Americans and many elected officials who don't want to talk about the truth, who don't want to talk about science, who don't want to talk about facts, and want to operate on the fringe supporting conspiracy theories. And that's troubling to our democracy. It's troubling to the work that the committee is undertaking. But more importantly, for the American public, it doesn't bode well for us handling the big things that we need to talk about and address: protecting our country, addressing economic inequality, climate change. I mean, the issues of the day depend on robust debate. And if folks are going to operate on the fringe, it doesn't bode well for what we can do in the future.
I want to shift the focus to what's ahead. I mean, the committee has collected thousands of pages of documents. You've heard testimony from scores of people, sent out dozens of subpoenas. Where are we, and what is the next step or two that is in the works currently for the January 6th committee?
We're still in the investigative stage of the work that the committee is doing. We're taking testimony. We're having interviews with individuals, over 300 interviews that we've had so far. So while some of them do become public and a little more noteworthy, there are dozens upon dozens of other interviews that are helpful to the work that we need to accomplish or done behind the scenes. And so we're still in that investigative phase. The next phase will be the public hearings, where we can share some of the testimony and some of the work that has been done, and we can shed some light on it to the public, but hopefully in a setting where people can watch. And so that's the focus of what we plan to do in the near future, and then culminating in a report, potentially a brief report, followed by a more comprehensive report later in the year. But having something that people can put their arms around and read, you know, by summer seems like the smart thing to do.
Now you said the committee is still in the investigation phase, still conducting numerous interviews. One of the people that the committee has reached out to is House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. He's been invited to voluntarily testify and share what he knows. McCarthy spoke to the president while the insurrection was underway. Have you heard from him at all?
We haven't. I haven't heard anything directly related. We think that there are some of our colleagues in the House who were having conversations with the president and on January 6th, as well as the days leading up to January 6th. And I think that those would be helpful. I think if they believe they have nothing to hide, then they should voluntarily come and talk about those discussions that they had. We haven't had anyone take us up on that so far, but I remain hopeful that some of them will.
Is the committee open to sending a subpoena to a sitting member of Congress?
We have deep respect for the prerogatives of the House and our colleagues. Right now, we would like them to come forward, and we would like them to do that in a voluntary way to share the details that they had from their conversations with the former president. But as we have said before, as Chairman Thompson has said before, we're not closing any doors that will help our effectiveness in undertaking this effort.
You've said that you want to make sure that the public is very aware of the findings and what's going on with the committee. When you're presenting your facts to the people, I mean, are you considering televised public hearings set in the evening during prime time just to ensure that you get the most viewership?
Yeah, obviously, our first hearing was the two Capitol police officers and two Metro DC police officers that testified before us. That was done in the evening, and I would hope that we can do something similar. And we're still talking through what that looks like, but that's our hope is that people can tune in and watch and hear firsthand some of the pressure campaign that the former president was undertaking. So I think that that's one aspect that we will look at as well.
We've been speaking to Representative Pete Aguilar. He's a congressman from the Inland Empire and a member of the January 6th committee. Really appreciate your time, Congressman.
Thanks so much, man.